March of Time. On a thousand fronts, the history of the world moves swiftly forward. Tonight, the editors of Time, the weekly news magazine, attempt a new kind of reporting of the news. The reenacting as clearly and dramatically as the medium of radio will permit some memorable scenes from the news of the week, from the march of time. A thousand new details, new facts in the world's history come into being every hour. In India, at midnight, nut brown Mahatma Gandhi comes out of a conference with the Viceroy Lord Irwin, tells his followers that peace with England is approaching. In Peru, three men, dictator Luis Sanchez Cerro, Chief Justice Ricardo Elias, and Lieutenant Colonel Gustav Jimenez, all have been president within the past week. From every corner of the world come news facts about politics and science, people, time and religion, art and economics. There is one publication which watches, analyzes, and every 7 days reports the march of human history on all its fronts. It is the weekly news magazine, Time. Tonight, with the march of time, a new kind of reporting of the news, let's review some of the dramatic events of the week. Chicago. In the executive offices of the fifth floor of the City Hall, adherents of the mayor have gathered to celebrate with their chief his victory at the polls. This place is so gay and animated, you'd never think of it as a political office. More like a hilarious celebration in a crowded banquet hall. Or at the farther end of the room, a jazz band is scooping it up with Big Bill's campaign song, Happy Days Are Here Again. Caterers are carrying in trayload after trayload of food. Streamers are fluttering in the cigar smoke. Mayor Thompson is sitting at the center table among his friends.
It's a walkaway, Mayor Thompson.
Congratulations, Bill.
Thank you, boy. Thank you. Hey, I asked you before, and I ask you again. How are you going to lick Big Bill? Not with the nutty judge and the boy alderman. Your man will go on building Chicago's skyline. It'll be just too bad for the nitwits that get in the way.
Hello? Hello?
Just a moment.
Oh, Bill?
Yeah.
Is Governor Huey Long in Louisiana on the phone?
Well, well, well. Huey Long.
Yeah?
Pull that phone over here. I'm not going to get out of this chair again till morning.
Here you are. Hello, Huey.
Hello, Bill. Congratulations. We're all friends down here in Louisiana.
Thanks, Huey. That nutty judge didn't have a chance against me.
Here's a call from New York.
What's that?
New York.
Hold on a minute, Huey. They're trying to tell me something about a call from New York.
That's okay, Bill. I'll talk to you again. Whoop him up.
I'll see you soon, Huey.
Go on.
Who's on the New York line?
Mayor Walker.
Jimmy Walker, eh?
Yeah.
Well, push that phone over here.
All right. Here you are, Bill.
Thanks.
Hello.
That's you, Jimmy.
Congratulations, my old friend.
Thank you, Jimmy.
You made a great game, just as we all knew you would.
Say, what could you expect? That nutty judge and his bunch of hoodlums trying to pull a fast one on Big Bill? It couldn't be done.
Now, you go off and take a good rest now before the open election.
Thanks, Jimmy. That's just what I'm going to do. Oh, and say, for the election, we're going to borrow that East Side, West Side song of yours.
Mayor Thompson, here's another call for you.
You won't have any trouble beating Cermak.
Tony Cermak? Oh, well, I should say not. Thanks for calling, Jimmy. Thanks a lot.
Goodbye. God bless you.
That California call is coming through, Mr. Thompson.
William Randolph?
Yeah, I think so.
Hello, Mr. Hurst.
Hello, Mayor Thompson. Congratulations on your victory.
Mr. Hurst, I won through on our principles of driving internationalism and prohibition out of the Republican Party. There were 100,000 more votes cast today than at the last election. And I want to thank you now that our principles have once more been approved.
I appreciate your calling me. And once again, I extend my heartiest congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst.
Good night, Mayor Thompson.
Good night, Mr. Hurst. Now, boys, come on, gather around while we rehearse the new campaign song.
What's the tune, Bill?
Now, wait a minute, wait. The tune, East Side, West Side. And here are the words. They're dedicated to my honorable rival, Democratic Tony Cermak. Now, listen. Listen, here they are. Tony, where's your postcard at? Can you picture the World's Fair mayor with a name like that? What a job you're holding. Now you're trying for two. You better start thinking of one for me instead of two for you.
On the actual sidewalks of New York, morning and evening, and every Sunday, there has appeared for 48 years a brilliant crusading newspaper whose fame was easily commensurate with its ambitious name, the New York World. It was founded by a towering gentleman with black hair and a terrifying reddish beard, the late, great Joseph Pulitzer, who for three decades made his presence powerfully felt in New York. Joseph Pulitzer told his three sons, Ralph, Joseph, and Herbert, never to sell his newspapers, but to perpetuate their liberal policies and carry them on, worlds without end. But suddenly, unexpectedly, the Pulitzer sons appear in the New York probate court seeking to break their father's will. Son Herbert Pulitzer takes the stand to answer the questions of a sympathetic court, the courtroom.
Quiet. Quiet, please. Mr. Pulitzer, has the business of publication of these newspapers in recent years been successful from a financial point of view?
No, it has not, Mr. Jackson.
Have the losses resulted in reaching the company's reserves?
They have, sir, to the extent of about $3 million.
What is your best judgment as to the possibility of continuing publication of these papers?
Well, at our January rate of loss, we could continue for 3 months. Then our reserves would be completely exhausted.
Please explain the reason for this condition.
There are three principal reasons for this condition, Mr. Jackson. First, the crowded newspaper field in New York. Second, the publication of three newspapers by one company in ownership is not economical. The third reason is the fact that the world papers have always held a middle ground and remain there. Between the so-called high-class newspapers and the recently rapid-growing so-called tabloid newspapers.
Mr. Pulitzer, you have approached other groups regarding the sale of these newspapers?
Yes, Your Honor. I approached directly Mr. Block, Mr. Ox of the Times, Mr. Ogden Reed of the Herald Tribune, Mr. Bernard Baruch, as an influential non-newspaper man, and everybody whom I thought might conceivably have an interest in making a definite proposition.
Was any specific offer made by any one of these gentlemen near this price of $5 million that was named here in this contract?
This is the only specific offer we have had, Your Honor.
Have you examined into the credit and standing of the purchaser under this contract?
Of the Spitz Howard people?
Yes.
I have. The E.W. Spitz Company control all of the Spitz Howard newspapers, and there are some 26 of them, I believe, scattered all over the country. They all have excellent reputations. I'm informed they already have an investment of some $7 million in the New York Telegraph.
$7 million?
Approximately $7 million.
I see.
But Surrogate Foley reserves decision on the sale application. Dynamic little publisher Roy Howard of the Spitz Howard newspapers chafes at the delay. The 2,867 men and women who work for the World know that only a few of them can possibly find employment on the prospective World Telegram. They band together in a last-minute desperate attempt to buy the World properties for themselves. They call tweets through the World building, out into the city to old employees and to friendly bankers, to newspapermen in other cities throughout the world and throughout the country. Pledges mount to $650,000. Surrogate Foley, touched by the deadly seriousness of the employees, again delays decision.
Boy,
In the city room of the World, at 2 a.m., 200 nervous, tense employees, writers, artists, reporters, compositors, pressmen are waiting for the surrogate's final decision.
Here's a telegram from the Houston, Texas Chronicle.
Hey, quiet, fellas, quiet, will it?
The pledge to buy stock in the New York World is put under employees' ownership was circulated here this afternoon. $500 was subscribed in 10 minutes, with much more in sight. We believe there are thousands of newspaper men all over the United States to whom the World has been the law and the prophet, and who would pawn their last shirt to help keep the paper a liberal independent.
Oh, gee, that's right.
Hello, boys.
Hello.
Any word yet from the surrogate?
Expect it any minute.
Well, how about the pledges? What are they total now?
Nearly a million. And I hear that a big banking house is willing to back us.
Gosh, that's great, isn't it?
Boy. Here's another Rosenborn. He pledges $1,000 to the fund. Oh, and here's another.
Oh, well,
the Nashville Tennessean has raised $200. But I'm afraid we're too late.
I'll get it, Chief.
The decision.
Yeah? City room.
Well, what do you think it is? Yes or no?
All right, go ahead.
It's the decision, all right. Look at Joe's face.
I got it. Thanks.
Well, let's have it.
Sold to Strip Howard.
All right, boys. It's tough, but we're still new. We've just got time to get the decision into the last edition.
Last edition is right.
Happy boy. Yes, sir.
And at noon, a new cry is heard on New York Street.
New York, evening Royal Telegram. Royal Telegram. Evening Royal Telegram.
The first day's sale of the new World Telegram soars to 750,000 copies. We follow the march of time to France, the harbor of La Rochelle. The dread of all French lawbreakers are the penal colonies, and especially the terrifying Devil's Island in French Guiana, South America. Aboard the steamer La Martinière, which is just about to sail on her annual trip to Devil's Island, are 774 convicts. They are moving about restlessly in their cages between decks, waiting for the throb of the steamer's engine, the signal that they have started on their long, slow journey to a lifelong hell on earth. The bars of their cages are pipes from which will squirt steaming hot water should they attempt an outbreak. In three adjoining cages are 19-year-old Pierre Morand, mechanic Jean Celliere, and Henry Boussard, murderer.
Water, please.
Oh, they can't send me over there. They can't. Oh, why doesn't it come?
Shut up, the guard's coming.
Guard? Oh, pardon, guard. I'm expecting a message. My name is Morin. Pierre Morin.
What do you mean, message? I got no message.
But, guard, how long before we sail?
Shut up.
No message. I can't understand it. Well, they can't send me over there.
Take it easy, son.
Message. What good did a message do him? We're supposed to be leaving in a minute. And what a fine bunch he carries. 700 of us bound for a hellhole in Guiana to spend the rest of our days.
Unless we escape.
Escape?
I escape once.
Oh, you're Celerier, eh? Now tell me, is it easy to escape?
Easy. Listen. We'll be as close to the equator as you can possibly get and not burn up. You'll chop trees with a chain around your ankle. You'll be so weak from the rotten food, the heat, and the malaria. You know what they call it?
No.
The dry guillotine. Half the prisoners sent there die in the first year. You'll have a better chance to die than you will to get away from there alive.
Where'd you go? How'd they catch you?
Here comes the guard.
Guard, pardon me.
Well, what is it? Say it.
My name is Morant.
Already I know that.
I'm expecting a message from the President of France.
The President of France, eh?
Well, they can't send me over there.
Forget it. And shut up. And don't speak to me unless you're spoken to.
Hey, God. You don't mind telling it from the boat, please, do you?
Tell you when we leave. Why, you poor fool, don't you feel the vibration of the engine? What do you think that means?
What does it mean?
It means you're on your way to South America now.
No! No, they can't send me to Devil's Island! No! They can't!
Time marches on. The march of history since the turn of the century has destroyed many thrones. Today there are only 20 kings left in all the world. What royal names are in the news of the week? Madrid, Spain. King Alfonso, the only living monarch born a king, has once again averted a serious revolution. To American newspaper correspondents, he explains his present political stand and his country's present condition. King Alfonso is speaking.
The Spanish crown is not mine to give up. It belongs to my family. It is mine only temporarily. You must not believe everything you read about Spain. There is no revolution here. We have turned the corner. Among my earliest memories are recollections of the Spanish-American War. But all that was long ago. Now, Spain and America are the firmest of friends. But you are still waging war on us, you know. I mean, the tariff. The American tariff is in some ways more terrible than bullets. That too, let us hope, will soon disturb Spain no longer. We are on our way to peace at last. But it will be a long road.
What royal names are in the news of the week?
Bucharest,
Romania. It is 3:00 in the afternoon. An automobile speeding along one of the main thoroughfares suddenly turns into a narrow street. Halts in front of the back entrance of police headquarters. Out one is King Carol, the errant son of Queen Marie, who returned to his people and his throne last June. The two men are a general and an aide-de-camp. All three are dressed in mustard. They enter the building. Pass down an obscure hall. Stop suddenly.
What's that?
Your Majesty, the police must be third degreeing a prisoner. It's a trumpet.
It comes from behind this door. Lock, confound it. Open, in the name of the king.
The king, eh? I tell it to your grandmother. What do you want? Take your time.
In the name of King Carol, open this door or I'll break it down. Come, General.
It's done. It is the king. Pardon, your majesty.
Cut that man down, dog. To swing a man up by your thumbs like that. Why, it's barbaric.
Cut him down.
What is this man's affair?
Your majesty, he is suspected of being a pickpocket.
Suspected of being a pickpocket. And on mere suspicion, such a petty offense. You swing him up by his thumbs and beat him. Not a word, dog. General. Get this dog of a policeman's name.
Yes, Your Majesty. Take his name, General.
He knows that we've abandoned these barbaric practices.
Yes, Your Majesty.
As for this officer, let him be dismissed immediately.
No.
Let it be known why he was dismissed. And further let it be known that today I have visited many public offices. That I have found many such offenders and delinquents. Doctors absent from casualty offices. And that only in the tax administration office were men working as they should.
I shall make it very clear, Your Majesty.
Let it be known that this man's dismissal and the dismissal of other attendants and delinquents will serve as a lesson to all officials in the Romanian government. Make it clear to everyone that my raid today will not be my last.
What other royal names are in the news? morning is turning official Bucharest upside down. In Italy, King Victor Emmanuel is giving his daughter, Zarita Iona, and her husband, Tsar Boris of Bulgaria, a $2 million palace. In Vienna, the bachelor king, King Zog of Albania, is making love to a beautiful actress, with little thought of returning home to his monarchical duties in Albania. In South America, the Prince of Wales and his lanky brother George are drumming up trade for Great Britain. And in New York City, at 16 East 60th Street, Manhattan, in the Republic of the United States, a strange auction is going on.
What am I saying?
The article being knocked down to American bidders, among them agents for the Republic's richest men, are 488 historical pieces and objects of art from the palaces of the former rulers of the Russian Empire. A dinner service of 215 pieces from the Winter Palace of St. Petersburg. 17th, 18th, and 19th century English, Italian, and French furniture. Crystal vases, silver tankards. On many pieces are inscribed historic names. Catherine the Great, Tsar Paul the First.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is a beautiful gold-embroidered panel of mulberry velvet. Look at it! Look at this inscription in the center. It was a gift from the Emir of Bokhara to His Imperial Majesty Tsar Nicholas II, Emperor and Autocrat of all the Russias, Tsar of Moscow, Poland, Siberia, the Crimea, and Georgia, Lord of Stepkov, Grand Duke of Solek, Lithuania, Polonia, and Finland, Prince of Estonia, Lord of Kyrgyzstan, Lord and Grand Duke of Lower Novgorod, and all the region of the North. Now, what am I bid?
$50.
Ladies and gentlemen, please, this piece was presented to the late Tsar of Russia at his coronation in 1894.
$100.
I bid $100. Exactly $100. Now, ladies and gentlemen, consider. This is a souvenir of the coronation of the last Tsar of Russia, who wedded Princess Alex the Tenth at the deathbed of his father, Alexander the Third. You know...
150?
Oh, 150, 150. Who make it 250?
175.
175. 175. Who make it 250? Who make it 200? Who make it...
190.
190. 190. Do I hear any further bids? One, two, is there anyone else interested here in this beautiful disc of gold embroidered velvet, which comes to us like a souvenir of the passing glory of kings and princes? One, two, three, four.
Souvenirs of the Romanov, of Catherine the Great, of Alexander I, of Peter the Great, of Nicholas II. Over the auction block were the priceless treasuries of an empire for a song. ...1931 marches on. Washington, D.C. In the closing days of the 71st Congress, which spent a total of $10 billion, a peacetime record, senators and representatives are tired. Long sessions lasting well beyond midnight have frayed their nerves and sharpened their tongues. But in the closing minutes, in the House of Representatives, all the bitter animosities of the past few days vanish in a pandemonium of good fellowship. Amid vigorous applause, the House adopts unanimously a resolution thanking the cordial and dignified manner in which he had presided. Well, they're moving the clock back 10 minutes to give the Speaker time to reply.
Friends and colleagues, I need not say that I am profoundly grateful for this demonstration of your affection. Perhaps this is the last time I will address you from this rostrum.
The decision lies with none of us here. It is a decision that lies with an all-wise providence. With whatever providence may decree, I am abundantly satisfied. I ought to be,
for the three speakers of the House in all history will have had a longer term of consecutive service than I have had. I have enjoyed practically every minute of it, excepting a few minutes last night, when some members struck me as being perhaps a trifle bothersome. I esteem them all, as I have esteemed every member here during my service of 6 years. And now, the hour of 12 o'clock having arrived, I declare this Congress adjourned. Sine die.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are fortunate in having with us in the House today the Marine Orchestra. And I now have the honor of asking that great rival of John Philip Sousa, the Honorable Fiorello Guardia of New York, to lead it for us while we sing America, the Swanee River, and my own Kentucky home.
Harmonizing in the most dramatic finale Washington has witnessed in 15 years, the House of Representatives concludes its 71st session. You have just listened to The March of Time, a new kind of reporting of the news. The reenacting of memorable events of the week on the air at this hour every Friday night. What news will the next 7 days bring? No man can say. In England, will the renegade laborite Sir Oswald Mosley succeed in creating a new fourth party in British politics? In New York City, will police find the murderer of Vivian Gordon? In Moscow, will the Soviet officials now on trial for treason be given the death penalty, or will the next few days reveal that this new trial is only another gigantic piece of communistic propaganda? Well, whatever happens, you can depend on one magazine to summarize for you at the end of the week all the news of all the world. To tell it vividly, accurately, without bias, that publication is Time, the weekly news magazine. On the newsstands this afternoon and every Friday. Time marches on. Time. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.